Just wanted to thank Pablo for a nice introduction there. So I guess my talk is kind of a fusion between Pablo's talk about topologies and different types of vessels, and also Frank's beautiful talk showing how small ablations within the tissue can actually cause damage. What the title of the talk is One Vessel, One Stroke, the Diversity of Microstrokes Created by Single Vessel Occlusions in Rodent Cortex. So I'm very interested in studying stroke. What is stroke? Stroke is a loss of blood flow to a certain part of the brain. These are a variety of different MRI images from humans. You can have very large strokes in a human. You can have very small strokes. In the case of a large stroke, is what you typically hear about, in various patients, is an occlusion of the middle cerebral artery, affecting much of the cortex here. This manifests in a very large behavioral deficit or functional deficit. However, strokes don't always come this way. They actually can come in a much smaller form. Here is a lacoon, a very small stroke, probably caused by an occlusion to lenticulostriatal artery that Edith talked about earlier. Or it can be occlusion of a penetrating vessel within the cortex, causing a small occlusion like this. The types of behavioral deficits that are caused by these occlusions are much less bad, because you have things like limb weakness, clumsiness, aphasia, severe headache. These things are not so bad. You go into the doctor and he's like, oh, you know, it's probably okay. And sometimes you just wake up with a bad headache. You might have had a stroke, but you may not actually know about it. So these are small strokes. But strokes actually get to a much smaller level as well. This is beyond the resolution of the naked eye. When you slice through the brains of patients that have had dementia or cognitive impairment after they die, what you can see are very, very small strokes on the order of about 100 to 300 microns in diameter. And they're riddled throughout the cortex as well. So people think that there's a strong correlation between loss of cognitive ability and the accumulation of these very small infarctions. So in our lab, we're actually very interested in these two types of strokes, mainly because we can image the cortex and manipulate blood flow within the cortex of animals. So here's my two questions. I basically came into the lab with two basic questions. Can the occlusion of a single small caliber vessel actually lead to any cortical damage? Is there any redundancy within the system? We see all these loops that are happening below the surface, on the surface. Do these loops actually help protect the brain from small point occlusions? And secondly, what type of vascular occlusion will actually mimic, in a rat, will actually mimic the small-scale strokes that are seen in humans? So here's my basic preparation. So I study anesthetized rat primarily. I make very large windows within the brain. So they're probably about 3 millimeters by about 5 to 7 millimeters. This is a low magnification image of the vasculature labeled with a FITC dextran dye injected into the bloodstream. You can then take a 40x objective and then zoom in on a very specific part of this window and take these nice 3D stacks. You can see here from a planar image that on the very surface of the brain, you can see pial arteries. Here's a penetrating artery, and also pial veins shown in red and blue, respectively. You can go down about 300 microns or so, and you can see a penetrating vein that looks like a kind of a dot. And then you can see second-order branches coming off of these arteries. So these are the major arteries that we're going to be, major types of vessels that we're going to be studying in this talk. One of the cool things that you can do with 3D data is you can make really nice reconstructions. So Phil Tsai helped with some of this work. He basically took a 3D projection and mapped out where the arteries were and where the veins were. So the arteries are shown in red here. You can see the second order branches as they come off of these diving penetrating arterioles going down. We kind of like to think of them as cedar trees because they're actually very, very thick in the trunk, but then you have only very small branches that are coming off of it. So they actually can go quite deep within the cortex. This is all rat. All of this data that you're going to, actually, that's not true. This is rat right here. So I've thrown in a few mouse slides as well, just for kicks. Veins, similar, except what you see are there's a lot more veins within a cubic millimeter of tissue. And you have many more second order branches coming off of these veins.
Is this vectorization that's been done automatically or by hand drawing?
This is done automatically. Yeah. So that's a very good question. So if I can go back just to this slide here. To the untrained eye, this all looks like, you know, a bunch of garbled mess right here. But if you look really closely, here's an artery, right? And they're actually much sleeker. They branch in very specific, you know, angles. Veins are much more craggly. They branch at much, you know, wider obtuse angles than the arteries do. And they're typically much larger in diameter. So you can kind of pick it out. But there are no artery or vein anastomoses happening on the surface of the brain. So if you find an artery and you're pretty confident that it is an artery, then you can just follow it and trace it, kind of like what we did with Pablo's mapping paper. So let's ask the first question. What happens when you block a single penetrating vessel? So you already saw some of this data in Pablo's talk. But essentially what we're doing here is we're taking a photosensitizing molecule called Rosbengel, injecting it into the bloodstream. Then we're taking a green laser and focusing it down with an objective to the lumen of a single blood vessel. And we're irritating the blood vessel by generating free radicals and generating a natural clotting cascade. So in this way, we can actually occlude a single penetrating vessel. And here's an XZ projection of one, looking at it from the side, of a single penetrating vessel that's been occluded. Yes, so that's a really important point. That's right. That's right. So the important part here, how do we focus it down to a very specific spot? Well, first of all, we have to choose the right power, right? Because if you use too much power, you're going to generate like a little cone of light underneath as well. So you're probably going to be occluding things below. So we tune the power very, very specifically for a single vessel occlusion. And the other thing is to focus it down underfilling the vasculature or underfilling the back aperture a bit so that we can generate a nice little dot that will fit inside the lumen of the vessel. Okay, so one of the first things that was done in these experiments, this was done by a previous PhD student in the lab, Nozomi Nishimura. She went into painstaking amounts of work, measured hundreds of capillaries below the surface of the brain as a function of distance from the occluded sites shown in the X here. So what she measured was the speed of the red blood cells moving within the capillaries. And what she found was that when you're very close to the occluded vessel, of course, there's very little blood flow in the capillaries. But as you move farther away, at around 300 microns away, the blood flow seemed pretty normal. So what we're actually doing here is generating a column of ischemia by blocking a single penetrating vessel. So what actually happens to the tissue after 7 days? So Frank showed very nicely earlier that these microglia mice are fantastic in looking at immunogenic kind of responses within the brain to some sort of injury. Here we've occluded a single artery, shown in red, a single penetrating artery, and the green are the microglial cells, and here are X, the YZ projections. You can see there's no flow going into that penetrating vessel. But then in the tissue, you see this beautiful column of infarctions, very compelling. What's actually happening here is that the neurons have died. The glial cells are actually infiltrating into the area, probably some macrophages as well. Any questions so far? Have a safe trip.
Thank
you. So in other work, we also, this was done in rat here, we also tried occluding some ascending venules actually coming out of the brain as well. So ascending venules are also bottlenecks within the vasculature, just like the penetrating arterioles going down. The interesting thing about venules is that there are actually a lot more of them within every cubic millimeter of tissue. There's a lot more venules coming out of the brain. We calculate about 2.6 times as many venules coming out of the brain as there are arteries going into the brain. The really interesting thing is that the flux is lower in these vessels, so you kind of guess that perhaps the damage isn't quite as bad. But what actually happens when you occlude an ascending venule is you get a very similar column of deaths shown here in with this new end staining about 7 days
so
after.
Just the occlusion of a single
venule coming out of the brain. Yes. So you can see here, consistent with the ischemia data shown with the capillary blood flow measurements, the diameter across one of these guys is about 500 to 600 microns. Yeah, so actually that's a really good question. The reason why, so after one thing I should mention is that all these vessels that I'm including, I've actually gone and measured the amount of flow going through it to begin with. We measure the diameter of each vessel simultaneous with the velocity of the red blood cells moving through, so we can get flux information. That allows us to put a metric to all the vessels that we're measuring. And if you normalize the size of these occlusions to the amount of blood that is flowing through that vessel, there's a disproportionate effect between the arteries and the veins. So back to your question, what we find are that veins are generating much more damage than we expect in terms of how much actual blood is flowing through it. So we think that it's not all just ischemia. There's actually probably a breakdown of the blood-brain barrier after the occlusion of a vein that's causing the injury to kind of disseminate more into the tissue. We haven't really followed up a lot on this work, but it's pretty clear that veins cause a lot of damage when they're occluded, which is kind of, it's not expected. Sorry?
In contrast to the arterioles.
Yeah, in contrast to the arterioles. There is as well. So yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. We had a couple hypotheses to this because you're right. If you block an artery going down, red blood cells kind of just flow out somewhere else and they just don't flow down anymore. You block a vein, and what happens is there's an accumulation of red blood cells underneath the surface. And the red blood cells can actually be quite bad because they will release things like iron. Glutamate coming from the blood will actually cause excitotoxic cell death. So there's a lot of other factors involved in a venule-mediated stroke rather than an outright arterial stroke, which is basically what most people focus on is arterial stroke. Venule strokes, there hasn't really been a very good model to reproduce venule strokes in preclinical models yet. So this is kind of new data for us. We kind of did not expect it to be so damaging. I'm sorry, repeat one more time. Oh yeah. So we've gone to like orders of magnitude higher light, like laser power, at the focus without injecting Rhos-Bengal, and you don't get this type of damage. Rhos-Bengal is really the important thing. It's actually causing the irritation of the vessel and the clots to form.
So do you also get, so are you inducing some injuries so that microglia cells become infected anyway without blocking or occluding the capillary?
With the Rhos-Bengal?
No, without Rhos-Bengal.
Yeah,
So you are
with the green laser.
inducing the green microglia.
Oh, okay.
So you are illuminating the venules or the arterioles with
You mean like
laser.
heat damage or something like that? I haven't done that experiment. That's a good experiment. We just started playing with these microglia mice, so that's a good thing. That's a good control actually, experiment for our technique, actually. Okay, so basically the take-home message here is that the occlusion of a penetrating vessel, whether arterial or venule in origin, is going to generate a columnar-shaped infarction within the cortex. So just to give you some perspective, Pablo showed this graph earlier, so I'm going to steal it from him again. So Pablo showed these nice kind of honeycomb structures in the surface vasculature. He also said that this is the size of one of these single penetrating arterial cysts, and you can see that it doesn't really move necessarily into the domain of another penetrating arterial. The other penetrating arterioles are flowing after one of these occlusion techniques that we do, at least within the first 2 hours. And also, we're not really sure if it's going to elicit some sort of a behavioral deficit, because that occlusion is actually much smaller than the actual active domain that's necessary for somatosensation. Okay, so we've gone and we've occluded one of these penetrating vessels right at the very source, but let's go a little bit smaller and see what happens when you occlude one of these second order branches coming off of the penetrating vessel. For this, we need a different technique, so we can't use the Rose-Bengel technique anymore. What we use essentially is an amplified version of the two-photon laser to deposit a very small pulse of energy deep within the tissue. So here, we're not affecting anything above or below the focal point. And what you get when you make a pulse, a very large pulse inside a capillary, is you get an outright hemorrhage. The capillary bursts and all the blood flows out. When you get very small pulses, a single pulse will actually generate some leakage of the serum, but the blood will continue to flow through the capillary. And when you give many small pulses, you can actually induce an intravascular clot. So this was shown in the paper by Nozomi back in 2006. So let's see what happens. I'm going to go and just brute force destroy this capillary right here. So that's what it looks like when you induce a hemorrhage. The leakage of the fitzidextran coming out of the vessel. The cool thing about the fitzidextran leakage is that you can actually use it as a fiducial to find where you actually generated that damage in histological tissues up to about 7 days later. And here you can see that area of leakage. And if you look really close, there's no cyst that's forming, not like with a penetrating arterial occlusion. In fact, you can actually see little neurons that are living within that fitzidextran leakage area. So you can argue, perhaps you're not using a sensitive enough technique to look at cell death. I mean, here we're looking at cell viability. Why don't you look at cell death? Maybe there's a few neurons that are actually dying here.
We have this picture also, Mr. Duffy's thing.
This one here?
Mr. Duffy's thing. So whether you have already an accumulation of microglia cells at that site. So within UN, you do not see that.
Yeah, you know, I'm almost positive that there will be microglial. In fact, you know what's happening here? These green cells here is not FITC that's just sitting in a parenchyma. It's actually FITC taken up by some sort of an immune cell that looks like a microglia. I've done some IBA staining, and they seem to overlap. So these microglia are there. Yeah, they seem to pull up the fitzidextran a little bit, and undoubtedly they'd be accumulating in that area. So I used a different technique to get more sensitive, because we're looking at very small areas of cell death here. So I used a technique developed in Dalcara's lab, where what you can do is you can inject propidium iodide into the bloodstream or into the intraperitoneal space of a rat. So propidium iodide is a molecule that is normally excluded from living cells because it doesn't pass through an intact membrane. But once once the cell is damaged and the membrane breaks, propidium iodide leaks into the cell and then labels the DNA. So in this case, what we did was we occluded a secondary branch coming off a vein, and then what we could see 2 days later, what you get when you inject the propidium iodide into the bloodstream is a snapshot of what cells were actually dying at that time. You perfuse the animal, you can see that right next to the lumen of the occluded vessel, there's FITC, but there's also a few propidium iodide labeled neurons as well. Or they might not be neurons, but they could be any cell type. So essentially what we've done here is we've occluded a very small secondary branch coming off of one of these penetrating vessels. You get an order of magnitude, several orders of magnitude lower cell death than occluding a whole penetrating vessel. So that was kind of interesting. Okay, so we've gone smaller. It only makes sense to go bigger as well. So what happens when we start occluding multiple penetrating vessels right at the source at the same time? So we did this experiment. So here is a cranial window, and what we've done is we've occluded many penetrating vessels within the window. V are ascending venules, and P are penetrating arterioles. And the blue circle is actually the predicted size of what one of these cysts should look like based on single vessel occlusion data that we had earlier. So I expected this to look like Swiss cheese after we made this occlusion. Can you guys guess what would actually happen? Anybody care to take a guess? Kumar, no, you work in my lab. You should. Okay, so this is what happened. We saw much more cell death than we expected to see. Almost like there was a cooperation between the cysts that were actually formed. Even in areas in between where, like, you could immediately after the occlusion, you look. Sorry, go ahead. Oh, you have a question? No? Oh, okay, just stretching. All right. So immediately after the occlusion, you can actually go in there and see that all the vessels are still flowing, and only the vessels that are occluded are not flowing. But after 7 days, there seems to be a recruitment of areas that were normally flowing into a cell death, probably happening over a delayed period of time, much like a penumbral stroke. So what I do is I go in here and I measure all of them at the beginning. That takes about half an hour, right? And then what I do is I start on one end, and I inject rose bengal, and I basically hit as many as I can.
So
a few minutes per vessel. So I think all in total, it's probably about half an hour to occlude every single one of these, and then go back and check them and re-occlude them if they somehow started reflowing again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, it's possible, but. So here, with these blue circles, this is based on data of just occluding a single vessel in an animal. With this blue circle, this diameter, I'm actually being quite generous. This is actually more about, like, you know, 600-700 microns across, which is a little bit more than the size of a cyst that we would see when we just occlude one. So the fact that there's this region in between where there's clearly a vein flowing to begin with, and all these veins are flowing on the day of occlusion, 7 days later, something weird is happening to that tissue in between. It's possible that, the combined leakage of damaging factors from each of these cysts could be overlapping on top of each other and creating a much more short-lived penumbra than the case of a single one. But I think the important thing to take home here is that the accumulation of these things is actually much more damaging than just a single one, and we didn't expect it to look like this. We could actually measure as a function of distance away from each other that, you know, you had to place these occlusions about a millimeter and a half from each other in order to separate the entities, these cyst regions. So we're occluding penetrating vessels. The loops are still there. There's loops in the veins. There's actually a lot of loops in the veins, too. We didn't talk about that earlier. Loops in the arteries are still there. They can still flow around each other. All the penetrating vessels around the area measured as controls are still flowing at that time. Maybe this will illustrate it a bit more for you guys. This is one example where here's a window. We've occluded four vessels here. Two of them are penetrating arterioles, these two right here, and two of them are penetrating veins. Yeah. Yeah. How many did I not? Okay, I didn't count as that many, but you can see right here, I mean, all of these little nubs that are coming off of here are all ascending venules coming out. They're all flowing at this time. What I've drawn here in red by visual inspection is actually what isn't not flowing. So at 2 hours after the occlusion, this is all I see that's not flowing. Everything else is flowing perfectly fine, right? There's arteries and there's veins coming out of here. There's a zone in between where there's lots of flow. Now, at 6 hours, what's happening here is that you start seeing, like, arteries and veins around the area being recruited into the kind of no flow region. So they're not flowing anymore. And at 1 day and 2 days, which are very similar, what you can see is that there's a gigantic region of no flow. And that just keep in mind that each of these ascending venules is capable themselves of making a cyst. So there seems to be some sort of subsurface propagation of clots that's actually making just a sparse occlusion of a few vessels into a much larger infarction. We did this in mice as well. So you might argue, okay, maybe you're removing the dura and things are changing in this cranial window preparation. And we did this in a mouse. This is a new paper that came out of our lab recently where we were actually able to image blood vessels, anything underneath a thin skull for long periods of time. So here you can see in blue is a skull, red are blood vessels. The green are the dendrites from a Thi-1 YFP mouse line. This is from the top-down view. You can see there's two veins here that I occluded, A and C, and then there's a penetrating arterial B that's still flowing at the time of occlusion. So here you can see the clots that are actually formed within the vein, and there's flow going through the vessel B. Uh-oh, that's not a good sign. You okay?
Late of sex.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this is what happens after 1 day. There's massive loss of neuronal dendrites here. Of course, I can't image that deep because the tissue is ischemic. It's starting to scatter a little bit. But what you see is some very obvious neuronal blebbing going on here. The veins that we occluded are practically gone. This is under, like, you know, a thin skull, right? But the interesting thing is this artery and structure is still there. It's flowing. But it's actually not flowing into the penetrating arterial anymore. It's flowing through it. It's flowing beyond it. So here's a little movie showing that in structure, the penetrating arterial still exists, but the blood no longer flows into that tissue. It actually flows beyond. So essentially, after 1 day, now this penetrating arterial has been incorporated into the whole stroke. And whatever tissue that penetrating arterial was feeding is now ischemic as well. So the propagation of these strokes from vessel to vessel is actually a really interesting thing that we'd like to follow up on. We don't really know what's going on exactly yet. Yeah? Yeah, so I'm not quite sure exactly how subsurface clots actually form and how quickly they form. We haven't really imaged deep to figure out what's going on, but I think what's happening is the red blood cells, perhaps they're sitting in that zone and they're ischemic and they're bursting and they're causing, you know, like some sort of signal to propagate along the vessels underneath. Yeah, but it's pretty certain that the capillary beds are actually becoming more and more occluded underneath. And when there's a back, when the capillary beds are occluded, then the flow going down from the penetrating arteriole can no longer happen anymore. So somehow that propagates. Okay, so just to kind of put it back in the full circle here, so what are the ranges and scales of these strokes that we're generating within cortex? So when you occlude one of these second order branches coming off of a penetrating arterial or venule, what you get is an infarct volume of about 2.01 millimeters cubed. They're very, very small. Can't see them by the naked eye. You occlude a penetrating arterial or vein right at the source, and what you get is an infarct volume of about a millimeter cubed. Okay, you can see this from a histological slice if you hold it up to the light. When you occlude many of the penetrating vessels together, even sparsely, what you get is an order of magnitude higher damage again, which is not kind of, it doesn't work linearly with the amount of blood that's actually flowing into the tissue to begin with. And then finally, just for perspective, the major cerebral artery occlusion model is the major preclinical model for stroke right now. It involves sticking a suture into the internal carotid artery to block the middle cerebral artery at its very origin. And the amount of damage it causes is about an order of magnitude higher than everything that we've seen so far. So we're looking at very small strokes, and we work our way down this scale down to what we think is the smallest stroke that you can generate within the cortex. So the take-home message, occlusion of a single penetrating vessel, an arterial or venule in origin, will lead to a columnar region of infarction about 500 microns in diameter. A secondary branch coming off of one of these penetrating vessels can lead to several orders of magnitude lower damage. And this might actually be the source of the human cortical microinfarctions that we see in cognitive decline or in dementia patients. The most interesting thing that we found is that the sparse occlusion of multiple penetrating vessels can lead to an order of magnitude higher damage that doesn't scale linearly with the amount of flow that's going through these vessels to begin with. So could it be the propagation of clots below the surface of the tissue? The way I like to think about it is like you're logging, you know, and you're doing selective logging here and there. It doesn't actually, the idea with logging is that you're protecting the forest, but here we're selectively logging and we're actually destroying the entire forest. So it doesn't really make sense if you think about it that way. Okay, so any questions?